I'm Jeff Phelps. My partner over there, Dan Menigan, he's in for Andy Baskin today. Baseball, afternoon baseball for the Guardians. They finish up against the Toronto Blue Jays over at Progressive Field.
It's time to check on Cleveland's starting nine, powered by Bet365 Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the Cleveland Guardians.
All right, gentlemen, or gentleman.
But you're talking to yourself, too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You get so used to saying the same thing over and over again,
yes.
And your brain just breaks. Your starting lineup for the Cleveland Guardians today against the Toronto Blue Jays. Your pitching matchup, Kevin Gausman going against Tanner Bibee. That's going to be a fun one. Gausman's a good time to watch. In left field, the leadoff hitter, Stephen Kwan, hitting second for the Guardians today. Kyle Manzardo will be manning first base as well. The third baseman, Jose Ramirez, will be hitting third today. Carlos Santana will be hitting fourth, designated hitter. The fifth hitter will be Lane Thomas. He'll be out patrolling right field. At second base will be Daniel Schneeman. He will be hitting sixth today. Hitting seventh, Bo Naylor, the catcher. Eighth, the shortstop, Gabriel Arias. And hitting ninth will be Angel Martinez, the center fielder for Tanner Bibee versus Kevin Gausman at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. First pitch, 1:10 today for the Guardians, and that is your starting lineup.
That's Cleveland starting nine, powered by Bet365 Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the Cleveland Guardians.
Our guy Nolan Jones isn't in there today.
Can't have nice things. Just not allowed to have nice things.
You know, I'm not convinced that Nolan is going to be a, you know, bust out big time Major League Baseball player. But he had a really nice year. I know Colorado's, you know, hitter's paradise. I know. Had a really nice year when he went to Colorado. Hit over 20 homers, drove in over 60. And I would just like to see, as you pointed out last segment, as I've said in the past, wow, I'd love to see every day at bats for him. And I get it. You know, every guy deserves a day off once in a while and blah, 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 blah. But the platoon situation doesn't seem to be working. The problem is this. You've got a glut of guys in certain spots, and you're trying to figure out center field. We tried to help the other day. I put Stephen Kwan in center. He's got three gold gloves and left. He's been primarily a center fielder until the minute he set foot in Cleveland. He was a center fielder his entire life. And then maybe you put a couple of bigger bats around him if you can find two guys that can hit. And then you go, because then you've got a center fielder who you would assume can play pretty good defense in center. And he can hit, different kind of hitter. And then you get your power out of the corners, get a little more thump. And if Lane Thomas can keep hitting, certainly, Dan, he'd be in that conversation. Nolan Jones in that conversation. And maybe some of the young guys who are in AAA right now in the conversation when the organization deems them ready.
I can see why they don't. I can understand why you don't put Stephen Kwan at center field.
Yes, I understand.
Because of the speed, you're worried about the leg injuries, that kind of stuff. I understand all of those things. I accept those as a reasoning. Like, makes sense. But I'm with you on this, where, okay, so then let's figure out somebody who could go in center field with some level of pop. Now, that doesn't totally exist. You know, there's not a whole lot of center fielders that are out there that can do that. And I'm even fine if you're like, all right, our answer in center field is going to be Lane Thomas, and we're just going to deal with the fact that he's fast as all get out, has a really strong arm, and we're just going to deal with the fact that fielding balls in the outfield for him is a bit of an adventure. I'm even okay with that idea at this point, because at least Lane Thomas can draw walks and hit every so often. Okay. The problem that I will have is the fact that you continue to throw more logs in the log jams. That's what does me in. You've got a log jam in right field. Yeah. You got a log jam at first base. What do? You send a guy who was in right field and Jenkenzie Noel down to AAA and have him play first base.
Although he is a first baseman. He's got extensive first base on his resume.
But you're just rearranging the deck chairs. Like, you're basically have two massive piles, and you think to yourself, oh, I'm just going to take one thing off of that massive pile and put it on top of that massive pile.
Well,
that'll make a difference.
Let me ask you this one. How long do they keep doing that? How long until they make some decisions and sort through some of the guys that maybe aren't doing the job that you're looking for. You know, you're giving a couple of the guys in right field you have this year, John Kenzie, who was so fun to watch at times last year. Now Jonathan Rodriguez getting his chance. Will Brennan got a little bit of a chance, and then Will unfortunately got hurt. How long are you going to keep giving these guys a chance before you make a decision that you think, all right, this is better for the team, and we're going to just keep rolling these other guys out there?
I don't know. We're going on close to 10 years when it comes to shortstop. I mean, it feels like they...
Although you thought you had one in Rocchio.
Right. It feels like this is just the way of life. This is just the way we're going to live, is we're going to have log jams at certain positions, and hopefully the best one can grab it. The questions that I have with that is, well, how are you going to let these guys grab these opportunities if it's going to be inconsistent opportunities? And there's never going to be a rhythm that anyone's going to fall in. And then you're going to go out and address them with veterans that you're going to have to pay. And by paying them, you're going to want them to play. And by playing them, you're causing these other guys that you're trying to figure out if they're good or not to not play.
We've all looked at the AAA team. And C.J. Cephas is hitting .306 right now. And he moved up from Akron. Chase DeLauder hitting .321. Okay, those are nice averages. Jonathan Rodriguez was hitting something like .336 in AAA. And John Kenzie Noel has been hitting the ball well since he went back. The difference between those four guys to me, a little bit, Dano, last year Jonathan Rodriguez was one of the best players in AAA baseball. He was really good. And so he's just kind of repeating what he's done. And we joked yesterday about trending appropriately. And John Kenzie is done fine since he's been down, and he's played well in AAA in the past. You wonder if those guys have hit their ceiling. You know, you hear about the 4A player. Maybe that's what those guys are. Maybe it's not. Maybe they can figure it out at the major league level. But they've had some chances, and they haven't done it yet. They go back to AAA, and they hit the ball well. Cephas is in AAA for the first time. You know, he seems to have an upward trajectory. Certainly, that's the case with Chase DeLauder as well. And I wonder how long the front office decides to stick with guys who aren't getting the job done as of now at the major league level. 18 guys have had it. I threw this out a couple weeks ago. 18 guys have had at bats for the Guardians this year. 18. 9 of them are hitting under 200. Half of the batters who have come to the plate for the Guardians this year, and some of them not very much. Will Brennan only won 11 at bats, but half of the guys who have come to the plate for the Guardians this year have a batting average that starts with 1.
They're not walking either.
And I'm including Will Brennan, whose batting average starts with a 0.
This isn't the old Adam Dunn. Well, he's got a .360 on base that he's slugging .500. You're not making contact, and you're not seeing a lot of as many pitches as you probably should be.
Lane Thomas is trending up last couple of games. Let's hope he keeps that going. Will Wilson, who's been good in the minors, was not good in his very short stint here, but he did get some at-bats, so that's a good thing. He had 51 at-bats. I just wonder, okay, you've given Jonathan Rodriguez a chance to be John Kenzie Noel of last year. He's not hitting very well. 161, John Kenzie hit 146 when he was here. How long do you stick with these guys? And dare we say, and you mentioned it early, David Fry, who hasn't found it yet at the plate, who's a veteran, who was good for you, especially early on last season. Not as good late, but early on last season was good. I wonder how long you keep sticking with this before you think we can do better. And maybe we can do better with a couple of young hot guys in AAA.
Would you buy that this is a veteran showcase? If I were to tell you, okay, the philosophy that they're going with right now is we're going to play Carlos Santana, we're going to play Lane Thomas, we're going to play, I don't know, probably those two, and that might be where it ends.
Maybe Gabe Arias.
Maybe Gabriel Arias. And this is a veteran showcase with the idea being that July 20th, we start taking phone calls of, all right, let's see if we can get some ancillary pieces for these guys to solve two things. A, clean up the logjam, and B, let the kids play. Would you buy that as a philosophy?
I would, except that I look at the standings and see they're 8.5 back and are contending for a wild card. You know what I mean? I think they're trying to win baseball games rather than showcase players. If you're trying to, I don't think you have to necessarily showcase a guy like Carlos Santana. People around the league know what he can do. He had a great May and he's having a lousy June. And June's almost over, so he's had a lousy month. He's hitting 178 this month. But he has a track record. You know what he's going to do. And his May was good enough that I would think you'd think he can help you. You know, I wonder about the showcasing. A great guy to ask is going to join us next. That's Anthony Castrovince from MLB.com. His thoughts on what this team should do, might do, as the trade deadline approaches. And there are a lot of guys not hitting their weight, literally, on this baseball team. It's Baskin and Phelps with Dano in for Andy.
Hi, JP. How you doing?
Hello. How are you today?
We're doing well.
That's good to hear. I can't believe Baskin and Phelps left a whole pizza in the studio.
Do you think they left the pizza?
No, Baskin did it with the intention of like, this is for you now.
To refute.
Clean up your mess.
I think it's more to refute the idea.
We don't want your pizza.
But every time there's a free food situation, Baskin and Phelps get hammered for it. And I kind of feel like this is like it's not just our free pizza. I think this is an
This is going to be here tomorrow when Ken shows up in the morning. He's going to lose his mind, which will actually be high comedy for all of us. I was going to remove the pizza myself, and now thinking about Ken getting really mad in the morning, it kind of makes me happy.
I mean, Big Weech isn't working tonight, so we do have some people who aren't usually in there. I don't know it's going to last.
Well, of course it's not going to. What do you mean? You
don't know it's going to last. Meaning, I think people might eat it before it gets to Ken tomorrow morning.
Who's eating this pizza? Now, this is the other side.
Who's eating this pizza?
Baskin, I'm not mad at you guys for leaving the pizza.
It's a good redirect.
It's more the idea that I've been trying to eat good, and I've only been on like a day and a half of eating good.
Yeah.
And I know you know me well enough to know I only have like 2 or 3 days that I actually eat good, and then we just go off the rails, and it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But for those 2 or 3 days, I'm awesome. And it might throw a wrench in that plan.
Definitely feel, if I'm Baskin right now, I definitely thrown off the scent that you totally took a shot at him to start the show.
He's the enabler is what it is. That's what it is.
Oh no.
He's enabling my dieting and now he's trying to get me to make some bad life decisions here.
I mean, listen, far be it for a fat man to say, I think you're enabling yourself. Hold yourself to a standard here.
I just got to look at that pizza. I got to smell that pizza. I got to take in the waft of the pizza the entire time.
We'll
now
get like a tens unit. So every time you sniff it, you can shock yourself a little bit.
Huh? I'm going to shock myself. Yeah. I'm a puppy now.
No, I was thinking it was from Dodgeball. Like White Goodman, what he did was he had the pizza right in front of his face and then... he didn't eat the pizza, did he?
Yeah, that was a real way of helping him out.
That just, sound again?
I'm just saying. I already said it once. I don't want to repeat myself.
I wanted it 3 times. No. I wanted it 4 times.
No, you're not going to get it because that's the way she goes. But yeah, I commend Baskin and Phelps for sharing their food. This is a new step for them.
Baskin seemed like he'd left us caviar. He was like, I got some more for you guys.
Man's
it's all
trying
right
to build a bridge.
It's all right here. I got it right here for you guys. Just go ahead and just take it.
How quickly this has
it
changed. All of a sudden, you're the shot taker on the show.
It's not,
and
no,
I'm
no.
The
you're
peacemaker.
Phrasing it. You're phrasing it as the shot taker, which is a very interesting portrayal. When it's not a shot, it's more the idea that I am trying to eat and do well. And he just
and
happened
Baskin's
to pick the wrong
aware
day.
Of that?
No, he happened to pick the wrong day. And then he left pizza in here. And it's like, just get the pizza out of here.
216-474-0092. Should Jonathan Peterlin become Jonathan Pizzaland? Should he eat the pizza
well,
in front of us?
Let's do a thing. Are you going to eat any of the pizza?
Absolutely not.
No, because you just had pizza last night, and you don't seem like you're interested in that pizza. Mm. I'm not interested in that pizza. Mac, you're not interested in that pizza?
No, I already had it.
All right, so Katie's not interested either. I know that because Katie does not really go down that road to begin with anyway.
Here's the difference.
No one's touching that pizza.
Except you will.
I will not eat that pizza.
You are interested in that pizza.
I will buy pizza-adjacent things before I eat that pizza.
I
will go downstairs to the bodega and buy a pizza lunchable before I eat that pizza.
I think you were triggered by delicious pizza that is free right in front of you. Still fresh. You can smell. It's still got that new pizza smell. And I think you're triggered right now. And I don't believe you.
I think we both looked at that pizza and saw that's not the type of pizza we want to eat to begin with anyway. And now that pizza is going to sit there to the morning. And then Ken's going to get all upset by it. And he's going to be running around talking about who left this pizza here.
You're snowballing.
I'm not picking up that pizza.
You're picking up that pizza.
I'm not touching that pizza.
It should be said that you're picking up the pizza.
You think I'm going to eat that pizza? I'm not eating that pizza.
You're not just going to touch the pizza. You are going to slowly satisfy that pizza and yourself at the same time.
What world
That's
are we
what's
living
going
in?
On. Don't you dare take it away. Dan, keep it right there.
What a mensch.
Dan, I love you. Mensch. Keep it right there. Because he is
Dan,
full of it.
You take
he
that pizza.
Full of,
you take that
Dan,
pizza.
Don't you
and
dare
leave.
Take,
you
that,
take
pizza.
That pizza and leave.
Nope. Keep
unless,
that pizza right
unless
damn there.
You think that Ken's going to get mad if we leave him until the morning. That's the only way I want that pizza to stay.
I'm going to tell you right now, Dan, he needs this test because you, me, and everybody listening know.
I would love to see Ken's face when he sees those 8 slices.
It goes from Jonathan Peterland to Jonathan Pizzaland in about 3 seconds.
Jonathan Pizzaland?
I'm saying it's happening
on
this show.
Jonathan Pizzaland?
All right.
I'll give one extra.
Oh.
He's got no mic in it. Actually, I actually heard him loud and clear.
Yeah.
I'm a loud man. What do you want from me? You think this makes it past the night show? Both of you work the night show.
I don't think Jake's working tonight.
Yeah, I don't think Jake is working tonight. Somebody is working. I don't think it makes it past Pizza Land. I'm going to say it right now.
I will buy pizza-adjacent things before I touch that pizza.
Yeah. That's what you tell yourself at 2 o'clock. At 2:30, all of a sudden, you get a rumbly in the tumbly, and all of a sudden, you're going to downtown Pizza Town.
You know me well. I'm not touching that pizza.
You are touching that pizza. You are all over that pizza. All right? You're like Pete Davidson with Kim Kardashian with that pizza.
That wasn't bad.
Here's the thing.
I didn't think you were going to land it. I really didn't. I don't think you thought you were going to land that, and then you did.
Yeah, sometimes. We all win occasionally. All right. We're going to keep you up segment by segment today on Peter Lynn and when he gets to this pizza. Because it
pizza.
Is a win. It is not an if. As long as Dan does not go and take that pizza out of there. He's wafting it now. That's how we do it.
Oh, my gosh.
Waft it. Waft it real good.
Going to have the smell of this gross pizza in here for hours.
Oh, God. Gross pizza, he says, 20 minutes before he eats 7 pieces of it. And then it's like, I knew I couldn't do it. With that being said, the Guardians are trending right now.
Yeah. Do you like this hashtag?
Yeah. I don't understand why this hashtag has actually caught fire because it's the most boring hashtag in the history of hashtags.
Actually, it's the right hashtag for the Guardians in many ways.
It sounds like a bad Seth Rogen film. The promotion?
Yeah, the promotion. Coming to theaters this July.
With
it's
James
not
Franco,
good.
Who's still problematic.
James Franco's in everything.
With Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
And he's problematic.
But they don't even like each other anymore. Apparently, they're like not even friends.
Yeah, it turns out you don't treat your co-stars right and maybe don't treat women right, and Seth Rogen will turn on you.
I never thought James Franco was funny. I like Seth Rogen a lot. James Franco never did anything for
Nobody
me.
Nobody did.
I'm not on an island
he
on that, right?
He was just obscenely good-looking, and Hollywood wanted him.
Yeah, he's not very funny. I don't think he's talented at anything. I don't get the appeal.
Although... Oh gosh, what's the darn movie? With Date Night with Tina Fey and Steve Carell. He's a very funny small role in that, but because he's just a bad actor. That said, the promotion is trending right now because Guardians fans have had it up to here. I'm putting it over my head for those of you who can't watch this right now.
Yeah,
Had it up to here with the fact that Chase DeLauter nor CJ Kafis is in Cleveland as of yet.
Well, and so we all waited, right? David Sampson came on and was like, June 17th. That's the date you got to wait for the Super 2 and everything to come and play with that. June 17th. You get past that, and it's wide open. You can go ahead and bring them up, and you'll have no worries financially. It's not going to do anything in that regard. Now that's been a week, and we've been sitting here and we're waiting, watching really bad right field play, really bad two-hole play, and you have answers down there in the minors, and I think Guardians fans have a big right to be mad at what's going on right now.
I just feel like, not to completely diminish the hashtag and the intent behind it, because I'm certainly not going to complain if Chase DeLauter's here tomorrow, today, or anywhere in the very near future. It does feel like we're just jumping around on things to bitch about, though, right? Like, we started with Dolan's is cheap because the offseason and whatnot. That now they've started to win again. Now it's, okay, now we got to move to the prospect thing. All of these, by the way, have a valid roots in their argument.
Well, listen, I'll take a call up the prospects. Let's complain about that over a week and a half ago when people wanted to trade J-Ram.
Oh, yeah.
This is a much better.
We're in the right direction. That's a great point.
I think we're moving towards the idea of like, oh, this team can actually like do something. Where if you call up DeLauter, who mashes, if you call up Kafis, who currently is mashing, all of a sudden you have yourselves a couple nice at-bats in there. And this is a team with the pitching and the way they've been recently, one of the best starting rotations in the whole month of June in baseball, which isn't saying much because we're still June's almost done. It is saying much. But you have a chance here, Nick. You have a real opportunity. I'm not saying a World Series team, but let's not lay down and die.
So the only... I think something complicating this is
support for this Guardians team.
Yeah, again, we're talking about a young team relying on a rookie to come save it. We already have enough young hitters floundering at the big league level. I don't think DeLauder would. Kafis might. But I think so that's one element of this. I do think there's something complicating this. You have a math problem in this lineup where you're trying to get the lineup going while finding meaningful at-bats for two veterans who are very clearly not in regular season form in Lane Thomas and David Fry. And you're trying to get rookies going, young players going.
I have no commitment to Lane Thomas at this point in the slightest bit. There's a reason why everyone's suggesting that he'll be traded and won't be on the roster past a certain date. I owe Lane Thomas nothing at this point.
No, I think Lane's the wrong guy. I think it's David Fry.
Well, David Fry is the interesting conversation. And right now he has not hit. He can only do DH because of his injury. But he hasn't hit enough. Like, I'm sorry. You don't get to keep your job based off of one great half of baseball last year.
Now, can we all admit, they thought, okay, he's coming off the elbow injury. He's going to come back and he's going to save the day. Like, he was kind of a Hail Mary from the front office, right?
Yeah.
Because if everybody realized where he was in his rehab, you would have just optioned him to Columbus. None of the guys of he's not good enough. It's just you need to get your feet wet, and then you can come up when you're ready.
And at the time when they did that, they were worried about the Super 2, and they were worried about the financial implications of all that stuff. And so they brought David Fry up with the idea that this could maybe satisfy the lineup and fix the lineup in many ways. So guess what? It hasn't. And we're past the date that you have to worry about. Get DeLauder up here. If you have to wait on Kafis, I'm fine with it. But DeLauder should be playing.
I just think with Lane Thomas and David Fry struggling alongside, meaning like they just needed bats, and you're already having problems getting them at bats because you have too many guys in this roster you're trying to play on. Hell, I can't get back-to-back days of Kyle Manzardo. So it's a little tough for me to like... So they're really like, DeLauder, hashtag the promotion. It's really tough to go to harden the paint on this one because I just need like certain guys to get every day at bats at this point, and that's not even happening.
Yeah, it's really not for me when you just look at the outfield, and I'll find DeLauder the at-bats. Kafis is harder to find the at-bats for. I get that. Manzardo, Santana, there's a logjam there, and I know they've been trying him out in the outfield and trying to get that going. I don't know that that's going to translate. I have no idea. But the only concern you have with DeLauder is if you bring him up and he turns out to just be your buddy Byron Buxton, essentially. That's what he's been
his entire
baseball career. He's been Cleveland's Byron Buxton.
He's a three war player.
He's an awesome player. Everyone loves watching him play. No one questions his talent, but man can't stay healthy.
When somebody brings his name up in trade conversations, we duke all over that man.
The man can't stay healthy. That's Buxton and DeLauder. I'm talking about the same person. It's the Spider-Man meme. But that's the same storyline with each. But as of right now, DeLauder is healthy. I want to see him play, Nick. I'm tired of it.
One thing I would say,
get him up here.
I'm ambivalent about this. When it comes up, I'll be excited for it, but I'm not pounding down the door for it because I don't expect him to save the season either. One thing I would say is, if he's going to get hurt, I'd rather get three games of him in Cleveland and then he gets hurt than another three games in Columbus and he gets hurt. I know, such a dumb...
You want the fanfare of it all?
No, I just want to be able to say, well, at least we know he's major league ready. It's an endorsement.
He's
from
major league ready. I'll tell you right now.
But no,
we don't need to hear it. We don't need anything else. He's major league ready.
But it does. You and I both think that, but it doesn't matter until that organization shows that he's ready.
He's like, ready.
They're the
call
ones,
him up.
They're the
what
ones
are we
holding
on?
Him back.
What are we waiting on?
Maybe a nice little 260 hitter, maybe a Luis Robert trade.
Oh,
if Anthony Elant and Mac Robinson
I saw
get their way.
That pop up again on ESPN. Thank you, Jeff Passan.
What was he, the 17th prospect?
I think it was 19th.
19th.
But they definitely put the Guardians in there with the list of teams.
Yeah, everyone should be lining up for a 111 hitter.
Matt goes shifty eyes. I want to, Nick should read you that in between the break, not on the air, because no one needs to hear it, but in between the break, what they had to say about him and just be like, that's your walk-off moment.
216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Robert asking for video of you and me arguing over pizza. Bove on Twitter saying, I am the pizza devil on JP's shoulder. Mm. And Jared saying, just eat pizza. One slice won't hurt. One tiny, itsy, bitsy slice is okay. He's right.
He knows what you know about me is I can't have just one slice.
Yes, you can.
It doesn't work that way.
Yes,
I'm great.
You're not trusting your own internal strength.
I'm great until I'm not. And when I'm not, oh boy, am I not.
Oh, but you're great right now.
So that's why we got to keep the good times going.
Well, you can keep, come on, you can do both.
This is it's like crack for me, man. Just one little taste is enough. Enough. It's a slippery slope.
I don't think you've had enough crack to substantiate that comment.
You're right. I've never had crack. If only I could talk to Rob Ford and figure out what it's like.
May he rest in crack. Quick hits coming up at 2:40. We got John Fanta at 4 o'clock. We've got Albert Breer at 5:20, 216-474-0092. Hashtag the promotion is trending. Guardians fans are taken to social media to put pressure on the Guardians to promote thine prospects. Why are the Guardians not calling up their prospect and Jose Ramirez's place in the Guardians deadline approach? In 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy over there is Andy Baskin. Guardians last night, Andy, putting up runs, baby. Getting it done.
If you stuck around long enough. They were putting up runs.
Stuck around long enough, they put up runs.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was 4-0. It felt like it was going to stick, didn't it? I thought 4-0 was going to stick for last night's game. I didn't get the feeling, but I do, you know, sometimes when it's warm out, and I mean, I hate to say it's that simple, but the ball loves to carry out of that place, and it did late in the game. What did we end up with after the six? Because they couldn't score in the first five innings, so they ended up with 4-6. Well, they ended all six runs after the six, but the problem was Toronto ended up with six runs after the six too. So
yes,
those first couple runs made a difference in the game. The starting pitching though over the last couple weeks has been good, and
been,
you know,
pretty darn good.
Yeah, so there's definitely reason for hope, I think, especially after they left Sacramento, which still sounds weird for me to say. So I think there's some optimism here. I think
there's a reason, you know, Sacramento's not in their team name, though.
Yeah, that is weird. Why wouldn't they just call themselves Sacramento this year?
Because they're the Las Vegas Athletics.
I know.
Soon enough.
They have the Las Vegas patch on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although that could just be advertising like anybody else's.
It is. It's a Las Vegas logo.
Is it bad that a lot of people have started calling them Sackland?
Nice.
Not a bad idea.
Nice.
Not a bad idea at all.
Logan Allen last night was solid. I did not see the game last night. I was out and about.
I cannot wait to tell everyone what you were doing last night.
We'll get into that later. I went to Blossom. Saw James Taylor. But we'll get...
This guy, you think... years...
That's not the point of it.
Couldn't hang on to the tease for a second.
I've got a real big point about it.
Couldn't hang on to it for a second. I've got to tell everybody. Give him half the story.
We'll talk about it later on. But there were some things that happened last night that you're going to just...
I had people thinking Jeff was at like a men's club last night, or he was out doing something he's not supposed to be. What, you know, the Friars Club or the Elks Club? You can't go to that?
Elks.
Come on, man. The Poobah?
Moose.
Yeah. So some lodge? Why would you take it to that road?
Going back and
don't even know
watching
you anymore.
The extensive highlights. By the way, if you need to ever watch highlights of a game, MLB.com puts together extensive highlights of every major league game. You can go back and look and condense games, all kinds of stuff, which I did. And by the way, it was a pain in the, you know what, to see Andrés Giménez make a great play and Miles Straw come up with a big hit. And by golly, there's Ernie Clement coming through while a kid from Midview's on the mound.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Home,
I love
everybody.
That story.
Yeah, welcome home, everybody.
That's a good story.
The Eric Lauer story.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, even if he pitched for the other team, it doesn't
matter. Yeah, but wasn't it interesting that three of the position players for the Blue Jays were cast-offs from this team? And not that you needed to hang on to those guys, and I understand why they didn't. And Miles Straw and Andrés Giménez were hitting eighth and ninth in the lineup last night, but that's all right. Ernie Clement's done a really nice job for them. Remember, Ernie was here for a while, utility guy. During the age of utility guys here, and they seem to be continuing. Nonetheless, you put up a lot of runs. You didn't get the win. The bullpen failed you for the first time in a while. But when you see some offense out of this team, this is a bad thing, I think, because it's like, hey, some offense. How about that?
Maybe we don't need to fix everything. Wait a minute, they put six runs on the board.
That's all good.
If your starters have been holding them under four like they have for the last couple of weeks, that should be a win.
Here's the problem.
10?
You know, Lane Thomas went 2-for-4 last night.
Mm-hmm.
It raised his average to 165.
At least it's going up.
Lane,
be optimist.
Yeah, terrific pickup last year. It worked for them, I think. And they just need him to get back from his injury and start finding that swing again. And that's okay. David Fry is your DH. David's coming back from his Tommy John surgery. He's not doing anything but DHing for you. So if he's only DHing, you need him to be productive. He's hitting 139. didn't say 239. I said 139. And he's your DH, and he's hitting cleanup.
If you keep saying it, it'll go up. You can start adding the numbers together. That's like he's hitting 350 right now after this conversation.
Gabriel Arias, after his really nice start, has settled in about 228. Jonathan Rodriguez, the latest candidate to be the platoon against left-handed pitching in right field, which makes no sense because Nolan Jones' career batting average against lefties is higher than it is against righties, is hitting 161. Is the answer sitting in Columbus right now, Andy? Is the answer Chase DeLotte? Is the answer C.J. Cephas?
Okay, so we keep talking about these guys.
Well, when do you give these guys a look?
It's soon. I mean, you're 9.5 back in the Central right now. And by the way, these games against the Blue Jays are important as far as the wild card is concerned, because when you look at, and again, I know it's really early to start this stuff, but look, Toronto's they're 2.5 games up on the Guardians in the wild card spot. The Guards now drop back to 1.5 behind Seattle for that last wild card spot. And Tampa's on top of a 2.5 game lead on the rest of the bunch. So these are important games. And so if you're still trying to figure this out and you're not going to make a trade, why does it hurt to dip into Columbus and maybe give it a shot? I know last night, I caught a conversation on the Blue Jays TV network with Dan Schulman, just talking about what you hear here. It was
Dan
weird.
Does because a good
he
started, job.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was like, that was like watching a network game last night. If you no, caught
he was,
it, if
he was
you were
a network
allowed to.
Guy.
And, I mean, they're so, that broadcast is so good.
Dan was ESPN.
They are so
That's
good.
A great but, job.
Talking about 4A hitters. And, you know,
we got a bunch of them.
Yeah. And so how do you break free of being just a dynamite hitter at the AAA level and then not being able to perform at the same level against the pros? And then the conversation I thought was interesting is, what is the gap between a successful AAA pitcher and a successful major league hitter? And why is it so difficult for these hitters that kind of seem to be in like no man's land? There's a Greek mythology word I'm looking for and I can't remember it.
All right, let me give you a couple of somethings, okay?
Another, what is it called? I forget what that layer is called.
I don't know.
Underworld.
For whatever it's worth, and again, AAA is AAA, okay? Mm-hmm. But if you've been in AAA for a real long time, maybe you become that 4A kind of hitter. If you just get to AAA and you're doing okay, maybe you're on that path and you're zooming your way to the major leagues.
Well, we know who that is. That's Cephas.
Last night, 12-0, Columbus beats Iowa. C.J. Cephas had a grand slam.
So in 306 for the month he hit for this month.
You want more?
282.
You ready? One mm-hmm. more? Chase DeLotte went 2-for-3. He had a triple. DeLotte's hitting 312. Cephas is hitting 306. These guys are trending appropriately.
Oh, good
they're
answer.
They're in the right direction. And I just wonder, and you asked why. I think the reason why is this. I think they're still trying to sort out all of these guys that they have that they're playing in platoon situations. But the problem with that is I don't think the platoons are working very well.
Trending appropriately.
You have the pitching to win. This is the problem I'm having with this whole thing right now.
Ding, ding, ding. Say that again.
You have the pitching to win.
There it is.
And if you've watched Leighton Sciacca's last two outings, That to me kind of just doubles down on this rotation where you feel like you're
Luis Ortiz last time
you're
out.
A solid four starters right now. Solid.
Andy, you could say five.
I'm just going to be conservative.
Who are you leaving out? Logan Allen?
Yeah, that was the only one I was leaving out.
And he's been solid. I think Logan Allen's done a fine job.
Okay.
So, and remember, Shane Bieber, in theory, is coming back unless he's used in a trade.
Yeah, I mean, even Allen went 5 2/3 last night.
Well, he kept you in the game. He gave you a chance to win the game. That's what his job is. Give you a chance to win the game.
It's just, it's wasted time. This is what's happening. It's wasted time. And you remember yesterday, we were talking about Francona's last year where, you know, at the trade deadline, they were a game under 500. So I understand why the front office might be saying, what are we doing? But they were only a game back in the Central because the Central was weak that year. They need to get on a winning streak here. So just give me a nice 5-game winning streak. Can we do that? Is that asking too much?
If your pitchers can remain consistent and give up less than four runs a game, do you think we can get to four? Can we get to five? And they've got to, the platoon thing just doesn't feel good. Like Ramirez and Kwan deserve better for what they're doing. Even Manzardo last night, I know he's hitting 220, but you know, two outs in the ninth, it's easy just to kind of lay down your bat and not give it full go. No, he hits a home run last night.
Now, though DeLauder is swinging the bat well, if you've watched Chase DeLauder's swing, and there are a lot of different ways to do it. You know, guys do different things. You know, Joe Morgan twitched his elbow like crazy. Carl Yastrzemski, Bobby Tolan held mm-hmm. the bat straight up in the air. No batting coach would tell you to do that kind of stuff. You know, guys do different things.
Pete Rose was flat, right?
Chase DeLauder has a really long swing. And you could even say he's got such, I don't know, launch angle swing, Dana? Best way to describe it? I don't want to say loopy. I don't want to say he's got a big loop in his swing, but it looks like his swing is so long that he's got a loop in his swing. But guess what? He's hit with that. And guys hit in different ways. Hitting coaches would say, hey, you got to shorten up that swing a little bit. Except guess what? It works for him.
Works for Matt Olson.
Well, it works for a lot of guys.
Works for Adam LaRoche, who had one of the longest swings you'll ever see.
And son of Dave. King of Lalab, remember?
Yeah, one of our first closer, I remember, right?
Along with Victor Cruz back in the day. Mm-hmm. DeLauder has this long swing. Doesn't mean it can't work. It's got a long swing. Could major league pitchers like shred him because of that long swing? Maybe. Wouldn't you want to find out? I mean, I've always, in this organization, I think has always done a pretty good job. When a guy is hot, probably gives him the best opportunity to succeed at the major league level. If he's hot in AAA, probably want to bring up a guy when he's hot. Kafis is hot.
Is the guy to bring. Kafis has not cooled down.
DeLauder is hot. I don't know that you bring up both of them, but man, we just went over the batting averages of some of these guys that they're trotting out.
Are you worried, though, that you're going to put these guys on the 71 Express? Like, I'm a huge Kafis fan. About him since the beginning of the season, and I've had friends that when he was at Lake County that were like, "You got to see this guy." I know everyone's talking about this guy or that guy, but you know, Kafis is the guy you really need to keep your eye on. I was like, okay, all right, I will. So
you may want to bring a guy up and have him stick, but there's nothing wrong with bouncing him back and forth a little bit. Jim Thome went back up and down numerous times.
If you could give me a bat like Jim Thome, I'm okay with
Gabe
that.
Gabe Arias went down last year, came back and earned a starting job this year, and he's in your starting lineup each and every night. I think it's time to get hot, and I have a plan that I think makes it easier.
A plan?
I do.
Wow.
I don't understand why this hasn't happened for this team. And it involves center field, and it's next on Baskin and Phelps.
I got to do what I can to get to Jim Bowden right now. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He joins us right now from CBS Sports. Excuse the coughing. Jason has
I shut the mic off. What else do you want?
Excuse the coughing, Jim. We appreciate your time. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Always my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Jim Bowden joins us from The Athletic as well. Again, he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So buyers or sellers, I don't know if we could say that sort of thing anymore with the second wild card, but if you were the Guardians, what moves would you be willing to make at the trade deadline here as we are just about over a month away?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are buying. We have a really fun race, right, in terms of the wild card race in the American League. I mean, everyone outside of the White Sox and Athletics have a legitimate chance of making the playoffs. And so the presidents and the GMs are just as important as the players will be in the month of July, because it's who can help their team the most in the trade front. And it's going to be a challenging trade front, because it's not going to be a seller's buyer's trade front. It's going to be contender to contender trades that have to be made here, because number one, the sellers don't have a lot to sell. And number two, everybody thinks they're in it. And so there are not a lot of people shopping players. So, you know, if you're the Guardians, I think it's pretty duh that they need offense, right? I mean, they're 25th in Major League Baseball in terms of runs scored. And I think a corner power bat would be perfect for this team. And it's not going to be easy to get because not a lot of them are available, but you still got to find a way.
Who's the biggest name you think it's going to get dealt at the deadline?
I think, well, Rafael Devers. Oh, I was right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go.
You went after Devers. I get it. I think it's going to be Sandy Alcantara, even though I don't think Peter Bendix is motivated right now to move him. And I think Peter, if he does move him, is going to get the trade return that he thinks he'll get when he's completely back to form. And if he doesn't get that, then I think he'll hold him, let him finish strong, and maybe look at it again in the off season. But I think he is the biggest name, probably after Devers, that's going to get dealt.
Jim Bowden joining us here on the show. So what would you do with Stephen Kwan if you were the Cleveland Guardians?
I mean, I don't think Stephen Kwan's a problem. I love Stephen Kwan. Well, I mean, you know.
Some people say, I'm sorry, is he untouchable this season for the Cleveland Guardians? I should have worded that better. Go ahead, Jim.
I don't think anyone's untouchable except for Maris.
Thank you.
You know? I mean, I think everyone can be available, but I mean, you know, I love Stephen Kwan. I mean, anytime you have a Gold Glove left fielder that hits 300 and steals 25 bags or whatever he's going to finish with this year and doesn't get caught, he's a winning player. And he would be better if there was more juice in the middle. The problem is you just don't have the juice in the middle. You need help with Ramirez. I mean, you guys know you miss Josh Naylor a lot, right? And I'm not opposed to bringing him back either, by the way, and making a trade. If Arizona has a bad month of July, I wouldn't be afraid to go bring him back for the rest of the year either.
As somebody who sat in that chair and had to make these decisions, how do you view what the Guardians have done? I'm going to say over the last 4 or 5 years, they had this glut of prospects a few years ago where all we talked about was this 40-man roster crunch and how they're going to find room for everybody. And it feels like they could never identify who they wanted to build around and who were trade pieces. And it turns out none of them were that great. When you talk about the glut of middle infielders they have, how do you evaluate how they have handled their organization the last 4 or 5 years in terms of just prospects and identifying who to keep and who to move on from?
I mean, I think they've done an excellent job, to be honest. And I think that's why they've had the success rate that they've had. I mean, they've had to make difficult decisions over the years, and yet they're always in contention despite doing it right. You don't really have that complete rebuild. And so the other thing we have to keep in mind too is that, you know, we all want prospects to perform as soon as they get to the big leagues, right? And as soon as they get there, because we look around, we see some of the young superstars that do it immediately. But we have to keep in mind there's a reason why all the algorithms in the front offices say your prime years are 25 to 30. And so I would always sit there and do the math before we make a conclusion about some of these young prospects. I would say, are we in the 25 to 30 range yet? Because if you're not, then maybe we're prejudging and maybe we're not giving them enough time to develop. I mean, this is a day and age where the technology and the analytics are such that players can improve more drastically than ever before if they have the right teachers and the right information and have the ability to adjust. So I think we all have to be a little bit careful before we come to conclusions, right? I mean, you take Jeremy Peña, the shortstop of the Astros, you know, I think the potential was always there, but this particular year he's figured it out. Yep. Right. And yep, he's been the best shortstop in the league. There was a lot of people that questioned how much Jacob Wilson was going to hit when five players were taken in front of him. He may end up being the best player in that draft class, and what he's doing for the Athletics is incredible. So I think we got to have patience. You know, it's like the Guardians' first round pick. I love Travis Bazana. I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to be a star. But it's hard when you're looking up and you're seeing Jack Caglione and Nick Kurtz hit bombs, yep, right? And you're sitting there saying, "Well, I could have had him." But I mean, Travis is 22 years old. And again, I think a lot of times we just jump to conclusions when we need to have more patience.
Can we really get Luis Robert in this town? Can we really trade for him?
I think you can. You know, I think it's always a challenge financially. I think the question is, do you want Luis Robert? I don't think it's an easy answer. You know, I talked to a lot of GMs about Robert, and the conclusion that we all come to is that the tools are exactly what we think they are, right? I mean, 2 years ago, we saw him hit 38 homers and steal 20 bags. We've seen him win a Gold Glove. We've seen him in the All-Star game. We've seen him really good. But we also have seen him not hit the last year and a half. We've also seen him appear bored at times. We don't look at him as a grinder, and we wonder how bad he wants it. And then on the flip side, we can look at it and say, Yeah, how would you like to be losing every single night? How would you like to be on a non-competitive team where no one can hit above you or below you, so nobody wants to give you anything to hit, so you just start swinging out of the strike zone because otherwise you won't get to play? You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways we can play both sides. I think if Robert went to the right spot, I think somebody could get a player that could still become a star. But he would have to buy in, like you'd have to put his locker next to Jose Ramirez, and you'd have to tell Jose Ramirez it's his job to make him a star and make him work with you and make him play the game the way you play the game. You know, I think the potential's there. Now the question is, can you trade for him? Sure. You have pieces that in your farm system that have the value that could land him. The question is, will ownership pay the freight for his salary? So it's complicated.
I guess I would ask both of you guys this because you guys are both with The Athletic and you guys are both, you know, insiders. But I want to ask Jim this first and then I'll ask Jason. Is a type of move for Robert the type of thing that they would go to Jose first and ask him about? Because, we're talking about moving prospects, so I'm sure Jose doesn't mind that. Is that something that Jose would sign off on or something they would give him power to sign off on, or absolutely not?
I would absolutely go to Jose before I traded for Lewis Robert. And I'll just give you examples when I was the GM. When I made the move to get Benito Santiago, I checked with Barry Larkin and a couple other stars in my clubhouse. I did the same thing when I brought in Tony Fernandez. I think it's extremely important when you have someone where there's conflicting opinions on, you want your star player to buy in or not buy in, whatever the case might be. So I wouldn't want to make that. If I was Chris Anthony and Mike Chernoff, I don't want to make that trade unless Jose Ramirez is encouraging me to make that trade, which if I'm Jose Ramirez, I'm going to encourage him because I need that upside of what Robert could bring to the table potentially.
It feels like Castellanos leaving Detroit all over again to me. I don't know if you see that correlation or not. He did pretty well once he got out of a pretty bad losing situation. But I also wonder, just within trading within the division, I don't think it's that big of a deal because the White Sox aren't going to contend. Robert will be gone from Cleveland before the White Sox are ready to contend. But just the fact that it's an intra-division trade, do you think that that would play a role at all?
Absolutely not, just because of how far the White Sox are from rebuilding. And if you're the Guardians, you know, you're not going to let that stand in the way when you're sitting there in what's going to be a very close pennant race, probably all the way to the final game of the season. You know, you got 9 clubs within 2 games of the playoffs with those wild card spots. So it's going to be a grind. I think any chance you can make a move to get better, you do it. And so, you know, whether it's Robert or whether it's Jesus Sanchez or Kyle Stowers or, you know, whatever corner outfielder you can sit there and get, I just think you got to find a way to add some juice here.
Find him on Twitter. He's on MLB Network Radio. He's a Major League Baseball analyst for CBS Sports. Of course, The Athletic. Jim Bowden. Find him on Twitter again. Jim Bowden, GM. Jim, thank you very much for the time.
Thanks, guys.
Jim Bowden on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Since we go after Robert, that'd be nice. It'd be a hell of an investment and a hell of a risk. Folks, the Guardians, they are back home finally. It felt like a 3-week journey to the West. I hate it when you guys go West, Curtis Danberg, who's the vice president of communications, community impact. I hate it, man. It's the worst.
It's so difficult when those games are starting at 9:40, 10:05. It's brutal.
What time in the morning do you get up?
Like 6:30.
6:30. That's an early morning riser still. When you start, when 9:40, I'm like, well, I can see the first few innings live, right? But it's like, God, when they started like 10 back in the, there's more teams starting at like 6:40 local.
Yeah. There's a lot of teams doing that now.
Can you tell me what the study was? Because at first I go, man, they're starting at 6:35, 6:40 when you guys first did that a few years ago. What's the study behind that starting a little earlier?
Especially, I think it's about getting done earlier and getting people home, especially during the week, whether it's when school's still in session or work night. They're more apt to come to the game. Mm-hmm. So our fans have told us that. So 6:40 has been the sweet spot. We do 6:10s April, May, just because of the weather.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, true, because, boy, it gets a little bit cold out there. Yes. But, no, 6:40, plus a pitch clock has to help and things like that. So it's good to see you.
Yeah, great seeing you.
What have you felt about some of the stuff in the first half? Because I got to tell you, Curtis, I've adjusted some of my expectations for the team. I was saying this because I was like, oh, Curtis ain't listening right now, so I can say all this. I was like, all right, I got 4 guys that I have a little bit of hope for. All right. Now I know that we had a lot of hope for Bybee and Williams, and I'm going, well, maybe I got a little bit fat off the essence of the the great pitchers that we have become Cy Young winners in the past. Maybe it's going to take them a little longer there. But they've started to come around. And then you got Slade Ciccone out of the trade. And then you got Luis Ortiz.
Yeah.
Who, boy, when he's on, he really shows you something there. And I'm thinking, if I can come away from this season with four starters there, and I'm not going to speak about Shane Bieber right now, but if I can come out with four young starters right there, which I think are all under the age of 26, I mean, I'm laughing at the end, hopefully going into 2026 and 27 and beyond.
Yeah, it's been the highlight of the year. I mean, obviously, it's been an up and down first half for us, but the highlight has definitely been the starting pitching, and they're keeping us in games and giving us a chance. So hopefully the bats come around, and it was great to see Lane Thomas connect on that one last night and put us back in the game. Obviously, went south after that, but if we can get him going, David Fry, I mean, it's not easy midseason to come in after a long injury. And in Lane's case, it was two stints on the IL, and for David Fry coming off a big surgery.
I think it's real quick, Danny Cunningham in for Tone. I do think it's so difficult, and I think they're showing it right now, when you miss with Lane and David, when you miss spring training like that, and then especially in Lane's case where you get started and stop, get started and stop, get started, like it's very tough to do anything, man, because it's a game of consistency.
We saw that with Gavin Williams last year. You know, got hurt in spring training, and he's been so much better this year because of that. So it's not easy.
Right. I think so much of the up and down has been guys that have missed time, guys that haven't been able to find that consistency. Like, just having, I think, a healthy Lane Thomas and having two separate stints makes it that much more difficult on the IL. But having a healthy guy like that, getting him going, I think could do a lot of things for this lineup.
We need that. We need to bolster our lineup, and especially in the middle of the order. We can't put it all on Hosey and Kwani. Speaking of which, we need a vote. Tomorrow is the deadline for the first phase of AL All-Star balloting.
It's there already.
So Hosey's in a good spot, and Kwani's right there on the edge to advance the next round.
I'm going to admit something to you. Tell everybody how they can vote, because I got to admit something to you here right
MLB. off. MLB.com.
I just assume that Jose Ramirez is a shoo-in, and it makes me less likely to vote. I'm sorry.
He's going to be an all-star.
I know, but that's not a question.
Well, let's vote him in.
Jose is our great guy, and it's like, okay, he's obviously going to be an all-star, and then I just go, well, maybe I don't need to make a big fuss about it anymore. I'm sorry, Curtis, don't beat me over.
And that's how you're unhappy with someone that gets elected, Ken, because you didn't vote.
Well, you know what?
That's how that happens.
But if I don't participate in
apathy.
It's a bad thing.
If
I don't participate in the democracy of it, then I have no reason to complain. I have no room to complain, apparently, from
Remember
what
I'm
told. Yes.
Yes. So when Jose's not a starter, blame Ken Carmen.
Oh, that God, happens. That would be terrible. All right. What's going on this weekend here?
So we got, obviously, Blue Jays tonight and tomorrow, 1:10, and then the Cardinals come in town. So we're celebrating the 80th anniversary of the Cleveland Buckeyes winning the Negro League Championship. So Free Shirt Friday is dedicated to that. We've got fireworks. We've got dollar dogs. Obviously, $2 beers pregame in the district. Saturday, we play at 4:10. We're giving away these caps, Cleveland Buckeyes caps. Mm-hmm. $2 beers for that game as well. And then Sunday, Kids Fun Day, we play at 12:10. We are on Roku this Sunday. So we've got that going on. And guess who's going to be broadcasting the Roku game on TV?
Who?
Tom Hamilton.
Oh, no kidding.
That's awesome.
So
is he doing like a double duty thing?
In honor of him? No, like he's going to be all TV.
Oh, that's great.
In honor of him going into Cooperstown, MLB reached out and wanted to give him a chance to be on the Roku game. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Is it? I mean, we're getting down to the nitty gritty when it comes to the All-Star festivities, because, I mean, that's when you go to Cooperstown. Yeah. How is it, like, the media obligations for him and things like that? Because I'm sure everybody and their brother,
It's a lot, and he's working on his speech. And, yeah, you can tell as we're getting closer, the stress level is going up a little. It's a big deal.
He's very happy and proud. It's so exciting for him, man. It's so awesome. There's nobody more deserving than Tom Hamilton.
I sit right behind Brad over at 8, and we talk about him all the time. Like, you know what your dad said the other day? So it's so interesting to see it. I'm like I text him during the day. He's like, I know. So you got everything going on this weekend. The plans for the summer. What's some of the big plans for the summer we got coming up here? July, well, August, out things of
this,
like that.
We go on the road to Chicago, mm-hmm. the Cubs, and then we come back for the holiday weekend against the Tigers. So that's going to be a big deal, and obviously fireworks and all that. But hey, they're who we're chasing. And this time last year, we were the team in first, and then we came back down to earth, and we ended up passing. So we hung on, I guess. Tigers came close, though, so hopefully we can do the same and get on a roll and catch them.
What's with the lighting that Owen asked you about when you came in? Because he was at the game last night.
We put in new lights this year.
Okay.
And then in mid-May, we started to introduce the flickering lights after wins and after home runs.
How's that going?
Going well.
It's a big thing. It first started in the SEC, and now everybody's doing it.
Oh, I know.
It looks cool, man.
We've been wanting to do it for years, but the lights wouldn't let us do it. But now we have brand new lights, and we can do it.
That's beautiful. All right, Curtis.
Add to the experience.
It's fantastic. So, again, what do we got coming up this weekend? Tell everybody again.
Friday night, fire it up. We've got Free Shirt Friday, Dollar Dogs, fireworks, $2 beers, Saturday 4:10 game. Giving away these Buckeyes hats. 15,000 fans get that. And then very Kids nice Fun hat. Day on Sunday.
Good looking hat.
That's awesome. All right. Curtis, we thank you very much for your
thank
time.
Thank you. Go Guards.
Yes, sir. Curtis Danberg, the Vice President of Community Relations and Communications and Community Impact. Boy, it just rolls off the tongue. Vice President Curtis Danberg joined us in studio here in the Smart Choice Windows and More studio. So I want to give it away. 4-pack of Guardians tickets right now. 216-474-0092. Caller number 9. Number 9. 216-474-0092. It's your chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Cleveland Guardians take on the Toronto Blue Jays tomorrow, Thursday, June 26th at 1:10 p.m. over at Progressive Field. Tickets courtesy of the Cleveland Guardians and your home for Cleveland sports. Sports Radio, 92.3 The Fan. Caller 9, again, 216-474-0092. Am I holding the standard too low? Did I lower the standard too far when I said that I'm hoping to come out of this season with a rotation?
I think a little bit.
He's left the room, so you can go after him.
Because I think it should be... because I think you're right. That should be part of the standard, but I think something that should be included is some of the young guys that we've talked about over the last couple of days is figuring out you're not going to know exactly what you have there 100% because development is not a linear thing. Guys are going to ebb and flow the same way this team has ebbed and flowed throughout the season. But I do think finding out more about those guys, I think a good goal, and it pains me to say this because I had higher expectations as I think you did coming into the season.
Actually, I didn't. I swear to God.
You thought they were just going to be a middle of the pack team?
I went back to it because of what they let go of. And it wasn't even Andrés Giménez. I know you and I bickered about that at 6:20 this morning. It wasn't even just that. I just thought, I thought I was going to see this. I really did. I thought I was going to see this coming, considering what happened around baseball the year before. And when the TV deal got changed, I thought, okay, this is going to be a weird winter. And it ended up being a weird winter. Sorry, I'm choking away hot dogs here. So it's going to be a weird winter. Yeah, because they always hit the spot at 7 in the morning. You know you do morning radio when you eat hot dogs at 7 a.m. Anyway, I had a feeling the season was going to be a little bit of a pullback. I felt that last year, you have to admit that they overachieved to a pretty obscene level. I mean, if you're getting all the way to the ALCS Game 5 against the Yankees, I think it's a tremendous overachievement. But I also knew going in it was going to be a rough winter considering what was happening in the business of baseball. And I knew it was going to upset the fan base. And I felt bad about that. And we talked about that with Anthony and I. Going into this season, I felt 82-80 was probably, which I said that I thought they were going to be 82-80 last year. I felt it was going to be basically the same thing. So my expectations, I don't believe there's been tough talking about getting to the postseason with me or getting to a World Series, which is the antithesis of what fans want to do when you get to a Game 5 of an ALCS. That should show fans in any given year why a team should buy in, double down, chase a championship. Guys, I get it. I understand. But I think when you saw the circumstances of what are going on, which is a giant excuse to some people, fine. But when you saw the circumstances of what was going on, I just didn't think they were going to be that team. It's frustrating in real time. It's frustrating to have two guys that are somewhat consistent and then a couple of guys that bat around with consistency here and there but really show nothing. It's frustrating that you take guys up from Columbus and they can't hit a broadside of the barn and you send them back to Columbus and they hit 400 because it makes you feel like you got a bunch of 4A players.
Yeah, which is not a place you want to be.
No, that's frustrating. And so I knew that this year was going to be more of a comeback to earth. And I said, what can I get out of this season? Can I get a young pitching staff that can start to resemble 15, 16, 17 all over again? Because it's been a while now since those years. Can I get a pitching staff to start to resemble that? Now, I don't want to deny myself the truth because I think I did that with Tristan McKenzie. But if I can get, again, four guys out of that rotation, I don't know what I'm going to get out of Shane Bieber. So I'm assuming it's, you know, right now I think it's Logan Allen who's the fifth. But if I can get those four guys to come around by the end of this year, and they've been much better in the month of June, that I'm looking forward to 2026 and 2027, because we got to start to get out of from underneath whatever's going on with the business of baseball, with the television of television deals with baseball, because I feel by then they would have something together. And if that means a labor strike, then that means a labor strike. That's what I got
to
deal with.
I think that they need to know who they're going to be in 2026 by the end of 2025, so that way they can operate the offseason properly. They need to know what they have. To your point about the pitching rotation, that matters. But they need to know what they have 1 through 9. You can count on the consistency of Stephen Kwan, Jose Ramirez, but you need to figure out those other 7 spots, or at least know where you have questions so they can be addressed this winter.
Nick Wilson, Jonathan Peterlin back on Afternoon Drive. And I don't know if there's a more disappointing is the wrong word, depressing thing that can happen for the Guardians than you score 6 runs and you still lose by 4.
I mean, it was the way the game was flowing, though. It never felt like, even though you scored 6, the way that it happened and how it happened, it never felt like I was like, oh, the Guardians, they got this one in the bag or anything like that. Blue Jays struck early, and then it was just trying to play catch up the entire time. Like, there's not all 6 runs are created equal, is what I'm trying to say here.
Last night was the perfect confluence of events to upset Guardians fans, by the way, because, again, you lost 10-6. Your bullpen, you rely on a couple guys that maybe shouldn't be relied upon. They're the reason why it turned into a blowout.
You out on Gattis now?
I don't think he's been as good this year. Everyone talks that way about Heron and Class A. We've talked about how hit and miss Gattis has been.
I thought the broadcast.
He's been gas can Gattis.
I thought the broadcast last night did a great job with the idea that they're like right in that moment where they're like, Gattis is just not able to locate his fastball tonight. Like, he's really got to find a way. Like, you can tell when he's off, not locating it at all. Next pitch, boom, gone.
That's how it goes. You know, when the home broadcast says something negative about your player, you know it's about to go. You know what's up there. But then, of course, CJ Kafis hitting the grand slam last night. But I will say, Stephen Vogt, speaking of gas cans, did say it's very rare that we ever talk about something that a manager in baseball says after a game. His explanation of why yesterday went the way it went, not great, Bob.
You know, I thought we came out sluggish tonight. I thought it looked like we had a West Coast trip, and we just didn't look like ourselves today. I was hot. Those are all excuses. We need to be better, but we just didn't look like ourselves all night tonight.
You can't say those are all excuses and then double down on the excuse. Down.
Yeah, coming out sluggish. Why do you think that was? You had yesterday off. You have no excuse, West Coast trip or not. You had a whole day off yesterday to regroup, get everything together. You can't tell me coming out sluggish.
Yeah, I just I'm so glad you actually pointed me at this, because again, we're trying to evaluate Stephen Vogt as much as we're trying to evaluate the roster, because he's only in year 2 here. And again, I'm no Stephen Vogt critic. But this is the kind of thing, this goes in line with when they were going out west the last time, and he's like, it doesn't really matter. Or they were going on a road trip, and he's like, it's a road trip, doesn't really matter, we just got to do our job. And then coming back, they had a successful road trip, and he's like, I mean, what a win, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, I understand you're used to talking out of both sides of your mouth on this and nobody paying attention. It's inexcusable they were sluggish last night.
Absolutely inexcusable. You know what else is inexcusable? There was 2 really good defensive plays by Toronto, and this speaks to the sluggish nature that Vogt is trying to defend here. Jonathan Rodriguez shouldn't even be on this team. I'm done watching him play. He makes my eyes bleed watching
Johnny
him.
Johnny Baseball?
And the Jimenez play, we're going to get into that, but the Jimenez play, Rodriguez seemed like it was like a out for a walk while trying to go ahead and get to first base. No wonder Jimenez actually made the play work, because he had all day to do it. But it's the Ernie Clement play down the third base line that's going to drive
another former Guardian
absolutely bananas. Clement's killing the ball lately, too, by the way. It's the idea that Rodriguez seemed legitimately like he didn't have a care in the world to even hustle down the first base line to try to get there in time. And it's like, it's so infuriating. You shouldn't even be on this roster. You're not even good at baseball. Why are you the one that is treating this like it's lackadaisical?
And listen, you and I both understand that the game has changed. Not just the game, but all games have changed. Where the days of making an instance out of a player just are so few and far between in the common era. This is kind of a moment where if you're going to make a case out of Jonathan Rodriguez and say, if you want to come back, You fought really hard to get back in the big leagues this year. If you want to be back, maybe get a rocket up your ass the next time you want to go ahead and make a defensive play.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been, at worst, it should have been a bang-bang play. Jonathan Rodriguez should have been safe on that play. At worst, bang-bang play. You give credit to Clement for making the throw, and that throw had him beat by five steps.
So it wasn't sluggishness. Well, okay, they were sluggish. There's no excuse for them being sluggish, but I do think it's interesting. I mean, between Kafis hitting the grand slam last night, a guy they just refused to call up, DeLauder on any given night is doing this, that, the other, and the fact that they're kind of maintaining one game above 500, two games above 500, you and I were talking in the pre-show meeting, we kind of came around to this question of, like, what is the main emotion Guardians fans are feeling right now? Because they still are feeling emotions.
Yeah.
We're not quite to apathy. We're also not that far from apathy.
We're knocking on the doorstep of apathy. I think we're like a week and a half away. Last night was anger. Last night was mad. There was frustration. And yes, I do think Kafis doing what he did in the minors played a big part of that. But I think even before that, I think people, that was legitimately an angry crowd, angry fan base last night.
I mean, I even think like Manzardo getting the moonshot, Apo Taco, as we call it.
The most meaningless home runs you can have.
But as
in
a
the
pinch
existence
hitter,
of meaningless home runs.
For a guy that he should be playing over every day.
I know, but it's two outs in the ninth and you hit a home run
when
you're down five.
But it's more the idea that any insult to injury right now is amplified because of the situation they're in. Like, maybe the game's closer if you put the better player. And again, this is
That's the other part of that, though, because that plays into the platoon side of things that I think I've never heard in the past 48 hours a fan base go harder at the idea that they don't care about anyone trying to platoon anyone. They just want the best players out there.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't think fans should be yelling that for as long as they've been yelling at that.
I know.
Because they're right, by the way.
No, and fans are right, but it's interesting. In the last 48 hours or so, it's been the flavor of the past couple days.
That and the promotion.
Obviously.
Don't forget the promotion.
We have the hashtag the promotion for a reason. It's a bad movie. We got it. But the platoon thing is really getting under people's skin. But you can tell, this is where I talk about the anger and being mad, is that when you're talking about these type of things, there's first off, we have multiple arrows that are being thrown at the Guardians right now. And none of it is not without merit.
So I also think the Guardians are in damage control. I don't want to kill them for it because they should be. But they're getting the right people out there to talk about things like why DeLauder isn't up or why Kafis isn't up. I just don't think it's the right time. I think the only thing that can simmer down fans and push them back to happy Guards fan is by getting a win tonight and then getting the series win at the end of this. Like, because here's the thing. You know it's when you've won two straight series, and granted, it's one loss of a three-game set. They can take the next two games.
Mm-hmm.
When a loss to start a series obfuscates the two series wins you have previously, your fans are pissed, and they're probably justifiably pissed. And I think to where you're going is, that's better than apathy.
It's better. They at least care at this point.
And so
we're getting close to it. When they have apathy and they stop caring, that's a different discussion.
I think the real moment of apathy is if they make a sellers-type trade at the deadline.
I mean, it's more the idea, though, that like I can sit there and I can talk about votes, comments after the game, and we can discuss Hunter Gaddis, and we can talk about was Manzardo's homer meaningless, all these type of things, and people are listening along, and they're like, okay, cool. In 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now, if things aren't going well, we're not going to get that same response. They're going to be like, as badly as you guys don't want us to talk Browns quarterbacks, you'll be like, talk Browns quarterbacks.
It's going to be real. And here's the thing. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, beyond just winning, because winning's always the obvious answer.
Yeah, winning's the easy cure.
Like, what are the other things they can do? And I don't even know if they actually do call up DeLauder. I don't even know how long that'll last. Like, I don't even know, like, right now.
Well,
again,
and they'll take some slack, too, in that, because they'd call up DeLauder, and then they'd platoon him, and then people would just get angry that they're not playing the better player, like we're kind of doing right now with Manzardo.
And again, yet another thing that'll be a valid, like, what the hell's going on here? You know me, I've kind of defended Vogt in general, and maybe the organization, too. I shouldn't maybe just say just Steven, because it's like, well, look at the roster, and you tell me what the better move is. We are getting into, it's tough to defend you when we just, the Manzardo is the biggest one. David Fry has three more options. That's a simple thing. Like some of the, we have too many players. We got a platoon, guys. Some of this is just your own making.
Right.
And I think that's what's frustrating. If it's like, For a minute there, I was willing to chalk it up to perfect confluence of events. We're kind of past the confluence of events, and now we're like, no, this just is what it is, and you're continuing to do the same thing you were doing last week. And at some point, it's tough to kind of, like, when the guy who, like, tries to play and tries to think of baseball in, it's 162 games, I still believe this team has talent. When I'm starting to go, yeah, okay, what's the deal with Manzardo? What's the deal with anybody but Nolan Jones getting at-bats in right field right. until DeLauder or Kafis come up? When I'm there, man, I think you've started to fly a little too close to the sun.
Because
I probably won't get apathetic with this team until after the deadline, just because, I mean.
Well, and so that's the other part of this, right? And I think they understand that as well. The deadline, here's my big worry, my fear on this. And this goes to the DeLauder and Kafis conversation, Nick, is the idea that I'm worried that they're not calling these guys up right now because they're waiting for a month from now when they don't make any big splash at the deadline. They don't make any change at the deadline. And they say, here's your new deadline acquisitions. This is how we get this team to a better place. Here's DeLauder and then here's Kafis. And that's going to have to be sufficient enough for the fans. Because if you bring them up now, then a month from now, we're going to be like, great, we have these pieces. Let's go for it. You have to make the trade. And it might force them to make decisions that they don't want to make right now.
I actually think, so it's funny. I think once everyone gets to apathy, I actually think it might be good for this team. I'm not talking about the organization. Now I'm talking about the guys in that locker room. It wouldn't surprise me if they sold at the deadline and they were this year's Tigers. Because I'm watching a lot of these at-bats. And I'm even like when, like, even when the bullpen, everybody's so tight when they're making mistakes right now. And that tells me that they know that they're in this precarious, that they're feeling the pressure of their lack of success this year. And I really think there's a chance, like you could see a Class A trade and all of a sudden DeLauder's up. And all of a sudden some of these young dudes just start playing a little bit more carefree because they think the season's over and they finally have the thing they need right now, which is just a 7, 8, 9, 10 game winning streak that puts them right back where they want to be.
Well, but and the other wrink on this too, and maybe talking about playing more carefree, is that when you have Kwan, J-Ram, Santana, and Arias is the only four guys that consistently get at bats on a day in, day out basis. Everybody else is scratching and clawing for their job.
Yeah.
There's no security attached to any of this. And I think that's a really hard thing to play through.
And it's a hard thing to play through if you're incredibly young. I really do think, I think John Kensi got, I'm using him as the, for instance, I know he's in AAA, I think he got crushed under the weight of the pressure of trying to perform when everybody started a deficit.
Yeah, and when you only get X amount of at-bats in a given week, too, and you know, hey, I got 6 at-bats this week, I got to make all 6 count, that's really tough.
Oh, and by the way, we're going to sporadically throw you in a pinch hit situation. Already, by the way, incredibly
pressure-filled. Sit on your ass for 2 hours and then get up there and go to a 90-mile-an-hour slider that just moves like you wouldn't believe.
While you're hitting a .115.
Yeah.
216-474-0092. Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media as well. What is the main emotion you're feeling as a Guardians fan right now? Because it's funny. I'm not to anger yet. I'm getting frustrated. And I think frustrated is right before I rage. But I'm probably one step behind where you are.
Starting to boil a little bit?
It's not like something that is. It's not like where the Browns were in any given moment and we can just melt down about it. But yeah, I mean, we're starting to see things like Manzardo not getting every day at bats and going, all right, what's the point of this whole damn thing again? What are we doing here? Who are we saving here? So what is the main emotion you're feeling? Has anybody reached apathy at this point? And it's the same question for the Cavs, but the answer might have finally changed. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.